This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. This is episode 220, being recorded a little bit differently. I don't have my regular headset. As a matter of fact, I've lost it. Don't quite know where my regular headset is. So excuse the sound quality if it's a little bit different than what you're used to. It should be all right, though. Anyway, this week I have a mixed bag of gun talk. You know, every once in a while I do these mixed bag shows. Yeah, sometimes they don't just contain one topic, they contain several topics. And I got a bunch more voicemails that I want to cover, and the voicemails are on a variety of different topics. So that's what we're going to talk about. And since voicemails happens to be the subject, let me go ahead and give out my number, 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. Please call the show. I'd like to have you give me whatever feedback you want. I got a lot of good ones. So we're going to dive right into it. There's a few announcements I want to get out of the way real quick. Ben and I just put up a new video on the Shooters Club. So for those of you who are members of our Shooters Club, there's a new video up there. I did it. I put the video up. It's on appendix carry. So for you appendix carriers out there, for those of you thinking of appendix carrying, watch my video if you're a member of the Shooters Club. I show you how to do it safely and effectively. Now, there's a lot of people out there that will tell you that appendix carry is not very safe. There are people out there that will tell you not to do it because it's not very safe. I kind of disagree. And if you watch my video on that, I will show you how I appendix carry quite safely. And you got to watch the video. It's impossible for me to explain on an audio podcast. So if you're a member of the Shooters Club, you've already been emailed the directions on how to look at that video. If you want to sign up, just go to handgunworld.com, click the Shooters Club page. It's only $75 for a one-year membership. $75, you can get 1 year's worth of videos and special audio podcasts, a lot of cool audio interviews, Masada Yub, John Hadaway, John Payne, Ben Branham and I. Those are some of the people that are on the audio interviews, and Ben and I have a ton of videos up there. We're going to be putting more up throughout the rest of 2013. So check that out. Just go to handgunworld.com and click the Shooters Club page. The other announcements is, well, I got two of them, actually. The two-day class that Ben and I are teaching, the 13th and 14th, enrollments have already started, already got some sign-ups for that. Go to the website, handgunworld.com, check it out. Close Range Gunfighting, Suarez International, their signature course that I'm teaching. Enrollments have started for that, too. So you can go to handgunworld.com, and enrollments have started for my Texas CHL course. You can find that at handgunworld.com. Whew, a lot of training going on in the next 3 months or so. But it's good. The training business is fairly healthy right now. President Obama is really helping us out with that. He's a terrific gun salesman. He's incredible. I mean, he's an incredible gun and training salesman. I'm in sales. You know, I've been in sales for 28 years. And I've never seen anybody so good at selling a product as President Obama is at selling guns, ammo, and training. It's amazing. Okay, let's take the first voicemail. Brett from Pennsylvania.
Hey, Bob. This is Brett from PA. And this is my first time calling in. I've been listening to your podcast for almost a year now. I just want to say that you do a great job. And have tons of just information that I'm sure helps a lot of people out there. The reason I'm calling in, though, I'm listening to your most recent podcast of the Modern Self-Protection podcast, and I know ammo is really hard to get right now in most calibers, but locally here in Pennsylvania, where I'm at with 22 long rifle, I'm still able to go into some local gun stores and pick up bulk packs, the federal bulk packs, 550 rounds for $19.99 still. And I haven't even had to go to paying, you know, premium prices. So I guess I'm just kind of appalled that you say that you have to pay 9mm prices for 22 long rifles. So I just hope that's not what we're going to all over here, because still I'm not having a trouble. Now, going to places like Walmart, Strip Clean, or any other main big chain retailer, but I've still been able to find it, and luckily last fall, for whatever reason, I started buying a lot of 22, so I hope that things start to turn around for that. Now, another thing I wanted to talk about was the 22 conversions. I actually have the SIG 522 pistol. It's an AR-style pistol. It also comes in a carbine version, too. And it's, to me, one of the better 22s out there. It takes the CMMG conversion mag. They fit it, too. I was able to pick up four 25-round magazines at a local gun store just this past week for $27 a magazine. So I felt like that was a fair price for them. And that SIG 522, no matter what ammunition you put in it, I can't find one 22 long rifle ammunition that it does not function with or I've had any problems with. So it's just a really good 22 that I think gets overlooked. But hey, I just wanted to say, keep doing what you're doing. I really enjoyed the show. Thanks. Take care.
Thanks for calling in, Brett. You know, this ammo shortage and these ammo prices, it's all over the board. It seems like it's a regional thing. You know, some parts of the country can find ammo easier than others and at different prices. Brett, I'm glad you're still getting 22 ammo at a reasonable, more normal cost. I just can't seem to find it. Not here in South Texas, not in the San Antonio area where I live. In the San Antonio area, again, I'm telling you, you got to pay almost 9mm prices, normal 9mm prices, to get 22. I've had some luck getting some 22 off of gunbroker.com at not 9mm prices, slightly below, but still a lot higher than 22 long rifle typically costs. So if you find a source of inexpensive 22, somebody said Natchez just has a bunch of it, Natchez Shooter Supply. I'll put a link in the show notes for that. Get it. Get a bunch of it. You know, a friend of mine's got about 11,000 rounds stored that he bought like about a year ago. So I wish I would have been paying attention and storing more 22 about a year ago. So, Brett, thanks again for your voicemail, and thanks for the update on the conversion kits. You know, I really think if you are the kind of person that trains a lot, shoots a lot, pretty tough to beat the 22 conversion kits for whatever gun you have, or a gun like your favorite gun in 22. I have to say, I didn't used to be a big believer in training with 22, but this recent ammo shortage and everything that's going on right now woke me up. So I'm a believer now. All right, let's get to the next one. Chuck from North Carolina. This is a two-part message. He called in two voicemails, so I'll put them back to back.
Hey, Bob, this is Chuck in Greensboro, North Carolina. I just recently got my first handgun. It was actually a Glock 19. I love it. And I'm taking my concealed carry class March the 16th. But just had a quick comment about the armed guard at the schools. I don't know. It just seems like to me that if you had an armed guard, you know, at the school, if somebody crazy was going to come in there and shoot the place up, the armed guard is going to be the first person they shoot. I mean, just the thought. And then they would be able to pick up his gun and even have an extra gun. So anyway, just interested to see what your thoughts are on that. Anyway, have a good day. Thanks. Bye. Hey, Bob, this is Chuck in Greensboro, North Carolina again. I just left you a recent voicemail. Just wanted to clarify, I was talking about the armed guard at a school being the first person that would be shot. And the main reason I wanted to bring that up is that I think it would be really important for you know, certain staff and certain teachers to, you know, to be trained and have a concealed weapon. The whole secret is where it's concealed, where the bad guy won't know which one's armed. And, you know, even if there was the threat that people were carrying concealed, I think that would deter a lot of, you know, criminals from even going in the school in the first place. But anyway, just wanted to add that. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Chuck, thanks for the voicemail. You know, the armed guard thing in schools kind of gets mixed reviews. I understand your point that they might be the first person that the bad guy shoots. I also think that they could be a deterrent, as you mentioned. I think it would be more of a good idea than it would be a bad idea. I think the armed guards in schools makes a lot of sense. I also think what makes a lot of sense is arming the teachers and the faculty concealed so that nobody knows that they have a pistol. But they can be the first responders if somebody comes into their classroom or their school to shoot the place up. Having well-trained armed guards in school, there are some negatives, possibly. I don't believe the negative that it's a high cost. I don't believe that at all. I believe that there's a way that we could easily afford it. Hey, let's get rid of some government wasteful spending, huh? You know, we don't have to get rid of that much government wasteful spending to be able to afford to protect our kids in schools, do we? All you got to do is just Google government wasteful spending and you'll see what I mean. So good point, Chuck. Very good point. Joe from East Texas is the next one. Let's listen.
Hey, Bob, this is Joe from Southern Texas again. As usual, I'm on the road just like you. I was listening to your podcast about the voicemails you're getting in, and I kind of had an epiphany about something as you kind of doing a review on somebody's phone call. Responsibility. There's a test here, and the test is ask yourself, whose responsibility is it to protect me? If somebody says that it's a city police, county sheriff, state police, federal government, whatever, to protect me, then you turn around and you bat and you give them this test. Okay, if it's the government's responsibility to protect me, then the government is there to do everything for me. And now the government must feed me, clothe me, house me, care for me, protect me. It's the government's job. It's whatever realm, whether it be city or federal. Okay, that's wrong. It is my job to feed me, my job to clothe me, my job to house me, my job to protect me. The only time that is not, that you are not responsible to protect yourself is if you are a child, somebody elderly, or somebody with a disability. And then it becomes the family's job, not the government's job. And the family can be the immediate family, the extended family, your friends who are, and my friends are part of my family, your church family, but it is never a structured government entity responsible for you. You are responsible for yourself. You are responsible for your family. The government is not part of my family. So, anyway, I was just listening to your podcast, as I do every day, and had an epiphany about that while you did one of your calls. I figured I'd share it. All right, thanks, Bob. Appreciate it. Let's see if you can get the Pepper podcast going as fast as you can on the gun side. All right, appreciate it, and hope to hear from you again. Bye.
Thank you, Joe. That's a very good voicemail, very well thought out. Very good voicemail on personal responsibility. I think he's hit the nail right on the head. You know, it's really not the government's responsibility to do much of anything for us. We have a big government problem. That's the problem, is too many people looking to the government to do all sorts of things for them. Why is that? Well, I have theories. I have theories as to why I think that is. I think it started in our education system long ago. And people long ago, I mean back even when I was a kid, people were taught to look to the government for certain things. And so it's kind of continued. Folks, if you're raising kids right now, teach kids personal responsibility. Teach them to take care of themselves in many ways and to protect themselves. Teach them when they're young. It starts when they're young. My son's been training in martial arts for 8 years now. My son's 15. He started when he was 7 years old. Well, he'll be 15 in a month. But so approximately 8 years, he's been training in the mixed martial arts. He's pretty good. He's got more to learn, but he's pretty good. I am not going to have any problem with him when he's an adult being able to defend himself in hand-to-hand combat. He's going to be better trained than 99.5% of the people that he might come up against. Okay? So when it comes to that, and I'm working on getting him to shoot better. We're working on that. We're working on the shooting portion. But, yeah, it's your personal responsibility. Absolutely, Joe. And I 100% agree with you. And thanks for, you know, bringing that to my attention. That's pretty much what both of my podcasts are all about, is personal responsibility. And, you know, those of us who are freedom-loving people, aren't we really about personal responsibility? Don't we really want the government out of the way? Isn't that what we really want? We want the government out of the way. Let us make our own decisions for ourselves. And it, you know what? Here's the great thing. If people can make their own decisions and they screw it up, they have nobody else to blame but themselves. So, folks, if you're listening to my podcast right now, the Handgun World Podcast, if you don't have a gun and you can legally own one, and especially if you can legally carry it, what are you waiting for? Take personal responsibility. When seconds count, the police are minutes away. That's the government for you. I'm not knocking cops. I'm not. It's just a fact of life. I'm not putting down police officers. I'm just telling you, it's a fact of life. The police can't be everywhere all the time. And you know what? They don't really have 100% obligation to protect you anyway. You have the obligation to protect yourself and to protect your family. So, very good voicemail, Joe. Thanks very much. Speaking of law enforcement, here's a law enforcement officer from New York that called in.
Hello, Bob. This is Lee from New York calling. I'm presently working law enforcement. I have a question for you regarding 38 caliber revolvers. I presently carry a 9mm as part of the job, but I previously carried them these days being used either as a carry weapon or as a self-defense weapon. Or ammunition may be more widely available. So as far as a backup handgun, what are your feelings as far as the viability of a 38, as far as stopping power? And also as to what sort of ammunition do you think would be most effective to carry? Whether just a lead core or hollow point jacketed. If you have any opinions as far as 38s go. Thanks a lot, Bob. Enjoying the show. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Lee, thank you for the voicemail. 38 Special. I think it's terrific. I think especially as a backup gun. Hey, a snub-nosed 38 revolver as a backup gun is terrific. The only limitation I see in that is 5 rounds most of the time. But it's a backup, so hopefully you won't need more than 5 rounds as a backup. Stopping power? Lee, let me tell you this. I think stopping power, in my personal opinion, has a lot more to do with bullet placement than it does with caliber. I may get some argument, I might get some hate mail on that, but the .45 ACP and the .40 caliber are not instant death rays. They're just not. You know, and one-stop shopping, one-stop. listen to what I just said. One-stop shopping. One-shot stopping power. In other words, the one-shot stop with a handgun. You know what? It's not very common. I think that's more of a myth than it is reality. Handguns suck. And the reason I say handguns suck is they suck when it comes to stopping power. So be ready to place your bullets where they need to go, Lee. If you can shoot that 38 revolver, it's one of the reasons why I like 38 specials in revolvers, because they're easy to shoot. 38 specials are easy to shoot. I mean, they're real easy to shoot in most revolvers, or at least easier than .357 Magnum. Therefore, better bullet placement is going to get you a better chance of stopping your aggressor. As far as ammo for concealed carry, hollow points only. Hollow points only for concealed carry. There's a bunch of reasons. You know, Masoud Ayoub can give you some very compelling reasons to use hollow point only. I really recommend Corban DPX, Federal HSTs, Spear Gold Dots in 38 plus P. Those are very good rounds. So get some good jacketed hollow points, practice with it, figure out what's the most accurate in your revolver, in your 38, and go for it. Even as a primary weapon. Now, I'm not a big revolver guy. I know that there are a lot of people who are revolver enthusiasts. As a matter of fact, I shoot IDPA with a guy that shoots a revolver better than 90% of the people shooting semi-autos. So, there you have it. Revolvers are still a viable gun. Not my first choice. But, Lee, you mentioned backup. Even for, you know, primary weapon. If you feel like six shots or five shots from a revolver, if you feel that's going to be good enough, I personally don't think that's enough for me. But as a backup gun, it's just fine. In New York, you're limited to seven anyway, aren't you? Unfortunately. Unless that changes. And I think for law enforcement, they're probably going to rethink their stupid law and at least change it for law enforcement. Still a stupid law anyway. But Lee, 38, revolver, excellent backup gun. Thank you for the call. Okay, I got a two-part voicemail from Troy in West Virginia. Let's listen.
Hey, Bob, this is Troy from West Virginia. I sent you an email, and we chatted a little bit on Facebook, and unfortunately the email didn't go through. I had a couple things I'd like to touch base with you. For one, you're making a government employee, Veterans Administration, that is, rather mundane day go by pretty quickly. You and Ben Brenham, who is a Marine, I'm a corpsman, go Doc. You guys make my day go by very quickly and with a very informative message. I'm going to read a little bit from the email that didn't go through, but first I'd like to say, John, the 1911 lover, repeated twice in the 1911 podcast about the Medal of Honor winners. As a military veteran, I can't speak for everybody, but I can speak for me and those that I know. You do not win medals. You earn medals. And sometimes you earn those medals in a way that is less than ideal. Just something that he may want to tread lightly on. Again, this is my personal preference as well as a few veterans that I know myself. Saying that you win a medal is kind of bad form or less desirable form. Anyhow. Today I picked up a Ruger FR-1911 Commander, got it for $650, which is a rather good price. I'm pretty happy with it. But my question is, gun shop owners, they, in my area at minimum, is making a very bad name for pro gunners. So I would just like to go read a little bit of my email. So over the past 12 months, I've purchased a Ruger SP-101 357 4-inch barrel, Ruger SR9C, Ruger SR22, and just purchased a Beretta PX4 Storm Compact, largely due to your review in the Glock versus Beretta podcast. I've applied for CHL, but in West Virginia, it tends to take a little while to get that approved depending on what county you live. My reason to contact you is not to just express my appreciation and respect, but to pose a new question that I haven't heard covered in your podcast as of yet, albeit I haven't had the opportunity to listen to them all as of this email. My question is as follows, Mr. Bob. What is your opinion on gun snobs? By this, I mean people who generally look down on others, trying to learn more and or breaking into this glorious hobby and privilege. My local gun shop has an individual that was rather upset that I exposed her to firearms in the military, whereas he did not. And in a roundabout way, mocked me for knowing only a bit about M16s and the Beretta 92F. My wife, Noelle, was interested in a Smith & Wesson 642, but I talked her out of it as I didn't think that would be ideal for her. I purchased her the Ruger SR9C, and she is terrific with it now. And the owner was teasing her about her inexperience and ignorance, and I don't think ignorance is bad. It's a learning opportunity regarding firearms. I'm not an abrasive individual by any means. I consider myself educated, responsible, and eager individual. Let's go ahead and throw respectful in there. Why not? But this businessman, quote-unquote, is giving pro-gunners a bad image, in my opinion.
Well, Troy, I'm very sorry. I think the second part of your voicemail got cut off. I'm sorry about that, but I think we essentially got your message. He's talking about John Hadaway, the 1911 lover. that interviewed with me several months back in defense of the 1911. Mr. Hadaway will be on the show next week, by the way. But if he's listening this week, well, Troy's got a message for you about the Medal of Honor, the people who earn the Medal of Honor. And Troy, about gun snobs. I don't like gun snobs. As a matter of fact, I'll give you a personal experience. My very first private lesson, and I guess you could call it my very first training, was with a gun snob. I didn't know he was a gun snob at first, but he pretty much laughed at me that I was a beginner. And, well, of course, he knew I was a beginner, but he just kind of made fun of me several times. And this guy was a USPSA Grandmaster shooter. I was coming to him for competition shooting training. So, obviously, he was very accomplished if he was a USPSA Grandmaster. You know, he didn't have to put me down. And, you know, I mean, he even made fun of the 1911s that I showed up with. According to him, they weren't good enough 1911s. And so, I really don't like gun snobs. You know what? Any modern-day firearm is pretty much a good firearm. There might be a few exceptions. But I'd say 98% of the modern-day firearms are good firearms. Most of them are better than the user. They're better than the shooter who owns those firearms. That's proven over and over and over again. You can take a terrific shooter and you can put an average gun in that terrific shooter's hands, and that good shooter will shoot that average gun very well. Conversely, you can take a really, really nice, expensive, custom-made, phenomenal gun and put it in the hands of somebody who can't shoot or a beginner, and that super duper gun is probably not going to make them any better. I've seen people shoot really bad with a really, really expensive, well-made gun. I've seen it at competition matches. I've seen it in training. It's typically the Indian, not the arrow. So I really don't like gun snobs, Troy. That's my experience, and that's my response to that. So kind of a good point you brought up there. And so, Troy, thanks for calling that in, and I appreciate that. Thanks for your insight. Sorry if the second half got cut off. If you don't mind, let me invite you to call back in and follow up on that voicemail, and we'll get to it next week because my voicemail screwed up. And I kind of messed up because there is another email from, or voicemail, from Joe in East Texas. He's calling about a different subject. So let's go ahead and listen to him talk about magazine springs.
Hey, Bob, Joe from Quitman, Texas again. I'm still listening to the podcast, but because I'm driving, I can't write down notes about stuff. You just got done with a caller talking about storing weapons in the safe with the action open. The theory there on all guns is that you want to, if you're going to store them, not for emergency use like you said you do. I've got handguns that I keep for emergency use, and they're loaded, cocked, one in the chamber, safety on, all that. Those are for immediate use. The ones that I have in my safe that are not for immediate use, the actions are closed, and for the most part, magazines are empty. And this theory goes along with shotguns as well as rifles, is that you want to keep all of the spring pressure off of all springs if at all possible. In other words, if you've got an AR, once you've done your function check and your cleaning and your clearing, military, we always drop the hammer. Therefore, that spring is not under pressure and it does not get weak or get what's called spring membrane. With the clips, people who even carry a lot of clips for their ARs, they will put one or two rounds less in their clip so they don't wear out their spring or give it memory. If you're not going to be shooting for a while, empty your clips. Except for one, you know when you load a clip what's in it, but also so you don't wear out the spring. Your shotguns and your rifles and all that, same theory, is that after you've done, cleaned them, cleared them, whatever, pull the trigger, which will drop the hammer, releasing pressure off the spring, or with a bolt action, you can open the bolt, however it happens to be. You want to take your pressure off your spring if at all possible, just to extend the life of that spring. So that's the answer to that. Again, I'm not an expert. That's my take on it. That's what I've been doing for years. And I've never replaced the spring. But, all right, thank you, sir. Keep up the good work. Appreciate it.
Joe, I agree with you, and thanks for calling that voicemail in. I kind of gave out the wrong message in that one podcast, so let me correct it. When storing a handgun that you're not storing for emergency use, in other words, if it's not one that you're going to use to defend yourself, you're just storing it in your safe. Action closed. And as far as the magazine, it doesn't matter to me whether it's full or whether it's empty, and I'll explain why. But definitely action closed for me. That's the way I like to store them. I think the caller that originally called in was asking if the actions should be open. I like to keep the actions closed. That's just kind of my personal preference, and I kind of like what Joe says. Now, in terms of magazines, I did an experiment once I want to share with you. In fact, I didn't even intend to do this experiment. It just kind of happened this way. I loaded up a magazine, a Glock 19 magazine, with 15 rounds of 9mm. This was about 2 years ago. I loaded it up completely full. 15 rounds of 9mm in my Glock 19 15-round magazine. I threw it in my 72-hour emergency kit that I keep in my car. And I figured, hey, you know what? If there's an emergency, I always keep an emergency bag in the trunk of my car, by the way, that has enough supplies to help me survive for 72 hours if I'm stranded out on the road. One of those supplies is a new magazine of Glock 19 ammunition. Okay, 9mm. I forgot about the mag being in my emergency kit. Completely forgot about it. And I even rotate a lot of my supplies, especially the extra food. I have to, because I have to rotate it and keep it fresh. Well, again, I totally missed the magazine because I had it in a separate pocket that I didn't even look in. About 2 months ago, I found that magazine. So the magazine's nearly 2 years old. And I had Corban DPX ammo in it, 15 rounds of Corban DPX. Good stuff. So I thought to myself, okay, it's been there 2 years. Let's see how this shoots. And it's been in all types of weather, hot, cold, hot, cold. So I marked the magazine as being the one that came out of my emergency kit that had been sitting there for 2 years loaded. And my next trip to the range, I fired all 15 rounds. Not one single problem. So I don't think it really matters. First of all, that's a good testament to the ammo, the quality of the ammo. Now, it was only 2 years. Obviously, you don't want to leave it for 8 to 10 years in a non-climate-controlled environment, because that's probably going to degrade the ammo. But also, the magazine worked just fine. And I noticed that after I emptied the mag, I tested out the spring tension, and the spring tension was almost like new. The magazine, when I filled it up with ammo, was new. It sat for 2 years, full of ammo. After I shot it, I compared it to the magazines that I use all the time for competition, and the spring tension was just like it was when it was brand new. I think what weakens springs, whether they're mag springs or springs in a gun, is the constant expansion or contraction of the spring. I don't think it matters if you leave it fully loaded or if you leave them empty. I don't think it's going to have any effect whatsoever on the magazine spring, especially. So in terms of storing guns or storing ammunition, to me, I don't think it's a bad idea to keep your magazines completely full, even if you're storing them for long-term storage. Just keep them in a cool, dry environment or even room temperature. You know, don't let them be subject to lots of temperature changes like it was in the trunk of my car in my emergency kit. But even so, absolutely no problem. That's why buy good quality ammo, buy good quality magazines, and you shouldn't have too many problems. Again, compared to the magazines that I compete with on a regular basis, because I don't carry the magazines I compete with. And vice versa. I don't compete with the magazines that I carry. I keep them completely separate. Just my personal preference. But there's a little testimonial. And Joe, thank you for calling in that excellent voicemail. So that's going to wrap up this episode. A little bit shorter than normal this week. Actually, by the time you hear it, this week is over. But Ben Branham and I had to do a lot of traveling. We headed up to Dallas. We taught the Beyond Concealed Carry course up there. I'll give you a report on that. Maybe Ben and I will talk a little bit about it after the class, and I'll splice that little episode, that little voicemail, that little voice clip. I'll splice that into next week's podcast. I'm getting tired right now, folks, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to come bring this podcast to a conclusion. But thanks to everybody who has called in a voicemail and contributed. Once again, the number is 210-646-1727. With that, thank you for listening to another episode, episode 220 of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. And remember, the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Catch you next week.
Boy, they all said, and he popped the pop roast all over his chest.